Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakraborty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And we'll begin today with the challenge of growing economic inequality in Boston and what can be done about it. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh has been hosting a group of fellow mayors, including Bill de Blasio of New York City, with whom he chairs a task force on inequality for the U.S. Conference of Mayors.
Despite a robust local economy and low unemployment, a study by the Brookings Institution found that Boston has the third highest rate of income inequality among the nation's 50 largest cities. Also among the findings, nearly half of Boston households do not have enough savings to live above the poverty line for 3 months if they were to lose their source of income.
So what can city leaders do? And why does this issue matter so much to the future of cities? We put that question to the mayor of Seattle, Ed Murray, who's one of the mayors in Boston today.
Well, it's important to me because the city I grew up in a working class family, it's very hard for working class families to live there anymore. That's why Seattle led the nation last year in passing a $15 minimum wage. If we don't do something to grow the middle class, then the future, it's not just the future of cities, it's the future of the country, is at risk.
Let me ask you about that $15 minimum wage. As you know, the criticism is that's going to slow businesses down, that's going to hurt businesses, it's going to cost jobs. Is there truth in that argument?
There's not. If you look at states and cities had higher minimum wages during the Great Recession, they went into it slower, they came out of it quicker. But the other thing, since we announced our minimum wage, which will be phased in, businesses are moving into Seattle. We're having corporate headquarters deciding to move there. We have restaurants opening. So the facts on the ground are very different. You pay people a decent wage, they have more money to spend, it stimulates the economy.
You know, a question that I'm interested in asking all of you guys, by that I mean all of you mayors, is this problem of income inequality. It seems so big, it seems so national, and it seems dictated by forces that go beyond the power of city halls and mayors.
I think you're right. I think we can lead. I think cities can take the first step, can be the incubator of how we can improve rebuilding the middle class. But ultimately, we need to take it to scale. Statewide and nationally. Cities are incubators of ideas. We're a great place to experiment in how you can raise a minimum wage and not hurt business, but we need the federal government and state governments to take it to the next level.
That's Seattle Mayor Ed Murray. He's among the mayors from around the country gathered at Faneuil Hall today. Led by Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, the group called on the federal government to increase funding for transportation and infrastructure, which has been level funded at about $50 billion per year for the past 6 years.
The mayors support President Obama's proposal to up that to $80 billion a year. Mayor Walsh said this past winter, which shut down the T, provided dramatic evidence of why a city like Boston needs more federal investment. And Mayor de Blasio said that's true for cities across the country.
I've had to close two bridges and we had the MBTA go down. So when you talk about a $50 billion bill in Congress, we probably could use in Boston alone probably $3 billion just to get those two bridges up and running in an MBTA. So it has to be significantly more than $50 billion.
Look around the world at our competitor nations. They are investing in new shiny infrastructure, whereas we're trying to just patch things up. It is not a formula for long-term success.
New York Mayor Bill de Blasio there and Marty Walsh before him. The mayor said, along with affordable housing and education, a robust public transportation system is one of the keys to closing the economic divide in cities. Again, here's Boston Mayor Marty Walsh.
I mean, I think we saw a little bit of it during the winter here when I said that. You know, the train lines went down, the buses went down, and the communities in Boston, Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, Hyde Park, they were affected tremendously by it, where people couldn't get a chance to get into work. I think it also allows us the opportunity, as we get this infrastructure built up, we announced two growth zones areas between Andrew and Broadway and Forest Hills. It gives us the opportunity to build infrastructure in neighborhoods, and what's really missing in some of our poorer neighborhoods in the city of Boston is economic opportunities. And if we can get our system back up and running, we have another incentive to bring businesses to those neighborhoods.
A quick follow-up on that. I mean, the gridlock in Washington, to what extent are you confident that you can get Washington to respond to this agenda that you outlined today?
I mean, the gridlock is frustrating. I think we have our congressional delegation here in Massachusetts on board. We have 9 congressional people. We have 2 senators are on board. It's frustrating watching what's going on in Washington, D.C., that, you know, the games that they play down there, not moving bills forward because simply there's a D or an R after somebody's name. I think that there has to be some area of agreement, and I think transportation can be one of those areas of agreement. I think education should be another area of agreement when we talk about money and funding to the states around the country. I don't think that the members of Congress or the members of the United States Senate have heard the voters, and I think that if they don't start to change their ways, I think the voters of this country are going to get frustrated.
Boston Mayor Marty Walsh speaking earlier today at Faneuil Hall. He was among a group of mayors representing the U.S. Conference of Mayors calling on Congress to pass a transportation funding bill to help address growing economic disparities in American cities.
And joining us now to talk more about this is Tiziana Deering. She's a professor at the Boston College School of Social Work. She's worked on the issue of inequality for a long time, and Tiziana Deering, welcome back to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with transportation. It's something that mayors can do something about. It's within their control. Transportation is surely important to working class people. But can better transportation reduce economic inequality?
Directly, no. Indirectly, yes. I mean, higher quality infrastructure and better transportation not only allows you to get people to where the jobs are, but create the opportunity for the jobs to go where the people are. Hmm. And we certainly know that with income inequality, part of the solution is going to have to be bringing jobs and new industry into neighborhoods that have been stuck in the same place for a very long time. And they map to our transportation weaknesses.
Interesting. So that's sort of what we heard Mayor Walsh just talking about there, though, his idea of bringing jobs into parts of the city that need jobs. If you have more public transportation, then jobs will follow.
Yeah, and you do have to have a strategy of both, right? Yeah. Both people to jobs and jobs to people. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to leave neighborhoods without any kind of economic opportunity and no infrastructure within them, the entire neighborhood's not going to grow. And we've got the ability to attract business and certainly the startup spirit in Boston. If we create those opportunities, they'll come.
I would like to ask you a really basic question. Why do mayors care about economic inequality? We hear lots of them talking about it, proposing to do things about it. Why does it receive so much traction at the local level, at the city level, and arguably not nearly as much attention at the national level?
Well, one, because mayors are closer to their constituents, yeah. Right? And they're seeing it and hearing it all the time. Two, because it's a proxy for a more complicated set of issues. Part's about income, one part's about assets, and one part's about mobility. So how much you earn, how much you save, and how much you can grow. And it's the intersection of those three things that affect both the prosperity of a city, but also its consumer class, right? Its ability to purchase and patronize businesses that a city wants, grow the tax base. It's a complex system, and mayors get that viscerally.
Sure. And I'd love to hear put the same question to you that I put there to Mayor Murray of Seattle, and this idea that what mayors can really do. I mean, yes, they're closer to the issues. They have a sort of visceral response to it. But at the end of the day, we're talking about issues that are affected by globalization and national trends and international trends. What's your view on what a mayor can really do to solve this vexing issue of economic inequality?
So I think that's interesting because I think there's what a mayor in general can do, and then there's what a mayor of Boston or New York or Seattle can do.
Yeah.
Because the conditions in a city like Boston are dramatically different. We have a lot more opportunity. We have infrastructure. We have business investment. We have universities. We have a port. We have an airport, right, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's not the same as asking somebody in a landlocked Midwest state with 100,000 people. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is there's a lot a mayor can do around assets, right? Experimenting with savings programs, with creating opportunities for people to build home ownership and home equity. There's a lot mayors can do to attract small business into neighborhoods that haven't had them previously, to raise awareness and to attract a coalition. When, you know, Boston's 600,000 people, that's actually not that big. Mm. There's a lot you can do to build coalitions. And this is a willing city and a willing commonwealth. So it's not the same, I don't think, as in a lot of other places.
Interesting. But speaking of that, I mean, we've heard over the years, and it sort of comes up every election cycle, the urban agenda. We've heard about it for a long time. But there's a powerful constituency that represents other areas of the country. And if you look at the way a congressional authority, congressional power is meted out, you know, rural states like Montana, North Dakota, whatever it is, they have a very different set of issues. And arguably, Western rural Massachusetts has a different set of issues that they're concerned about. So how do you make this urban agenda matter to the whole country?
Well, you have to... Everybody has to believe that a rising tide really does lift all boats. We, you know, we actually are coming to a time where more than 90% of the world's population will live in cities. Mm-hmm. So the urban agenda is a real thing. That's where economies will emerge. That's where new industry and innovation will start. So we have to address, be respectful and supportive of the needs of people in more rural environments, no question. But the answer can't be that we don't invest in cities and their infrastructure, because that is the source of new economic development a lot of the time. And we can't let it linger, because somebody else is going to eat our lunch.
Yeah, right. What do you make of the argument from the mayor of Seattle talking about a $15 an hour minimum wage? The Massachusetts legislature just passed a minimum wage that will nudge it up to $11 an hour. He got it up to $15 an hour.
Yeah. So until some of this has been done, we're not going to totally know what's going to happen.
Right.
We're dealing with a great amount of uncertainty, but we certainly don't like the results that we have with the current minimum wage levels. Yeah. And big change is, it used to be that the minimum wage job was not a long-term income strategy. If we're at a time when jobs are stagnating and minimum wage will be a long-term income strategy, it can't be $10, $11. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to be more. And we're going to have to be willing to experiment with that and see if we can make it work.
And speaking of experiments, and again, we heard the mayor of Seattle sort of talking about the cities as kind of the laboratories of these kinds of ideas. What else would you like to hear as part of the discussion about economic inequality? What's missing from the conversation today?
Assets. We talk about the income, but, you know, in Massachusetts, net worth of the top 20% is 234 times higher than of the bottom. Now, income's only 10%, but net worth more than 200%. So it's savings, it's compounding over time, it's building asset base. So if the T does break down and you can't get to your job, and you're going to face that three-month, you know, cliff into poverty, you've got something in reserve to protect yourself. And that's something we don't talk about in this, and we need to.
All right. Well, we just started talking about it here with Tiziana Deering. She's a professor at the Boston College School of Social Work. Thanks for coming back. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, stick with us, because when we come back, we'll have a roundtable of students from MIT talking about the reality of campus life and stress in the wake of four suicides at MIT in the past year. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.